Hello, I'm a nursing professor at Illinois State University and also an advanced practice psychiatric nurse. And my co-presenter is Kari Hickey. She's a nursing professor at Northern Illinois University and she's my doctoral student. And I'm sorry she couldn't be here. She did some of this data analysis during her residency and aging project. And I have no relationships to disclose. To begin, I just want to talk about what gambling is. The South Oaks Gambling Screen is the, you guys probably know what gambling is, right? But the South Oaks Gambling Screen is kind of the gold standard for gambling screens and assessing for if an individual is actually a non-gambler, a recreational gambler, a problem gambler, or a pathological gambler. So they begin by defining different activities. And with the older adult population, when I started doing research with older adults, I found that their definition of gambling wasn't always very comprehensive, so I found this information to be very helpful. Typically, they thought of gambling in a casino, betting on horses, certainly betting on sports, but not necessarily bingo or card games or something. And here's the rest of a list with even a surprising number of older adults choosing to gamble on the internet. So to look specifically at pathological gambling first, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual identifies a persistent, recurrent, maladaptive gambling behavior, which here are some examples. An individual similar to other addictions like alcoholism or drug dependence. This is a process addiction, so it's categorized actually as impulse control disorder. But if someone is preoccupied by gambling, the need to gamble with increasing amounts of money, they realize they have a problem, they try and cut back, they're unsuccessful, they become restless or irritable, or gambling as a way of escaping from problems. Also, going back or chasing losses, going back the next day, lying to family members and friends, losing betting slips, committing illegal acts, jeopardized or lost a significant relationship or a job, or had trouble educationally, trouble with classes or in school, or relies on others to provide money. And another thing that we see among those that have these pathological behaviors is that there are some people that tend to be more escape gamblers, so those might be someone that would sit at a slot machine or do some computer gambling and sort of zone out and not necessarily be sensitive to the environmental stimuli, compared to an action-seeking gambling person who is excited about the rush, about winning. Usually that's gambling, more like a gambling activity that where there's a skill involved versus something random like the slot machines. In addition, episodes of gambling can overlap with manic episodes, so we want to make sure that the gambling behavior is not better accounted for by a manic episode for a person with bipolar disorder. So to differentiate, we would have the pathological gambler experiencing five or more of those symptoms, a problem gambler, three or four, and a recreational gambler having zero, one, or two problems related to gambling. The study that I'm talking about today is a secondary analysis of 40 older adult recovering pathological gamblers that I studied during my postdoctoral fellowship and collected the data for. These were 40 adults aged 55 and older who were recruited through word of mouth from Gamblers Anonymous meetings from gambling treatment centers in both Illinois and Iowa. And I have to tell you, this was the most difficult part of my job. As a new researcher, I really wanted to find people before they had significant problems related to gambling. And I was met with really no responses. I talked to people at older adult high-rises, at senior centers, and oftentimes, even just saying, I'm a psychiatric nurse, caused people to scatter. If I talked to them about, do you gamble, and I went through this assessment, oftentimes I hear, no, I don't gamble. And then I said, well, what do you like about staying here at this facility? Well, every Tuesday night we have bingo. But they didn't really consider that to be a gambling issue. So and even then, you know, certainly they didn't have a problem because, you know, they just told me they did not. So finding pathological gamblers was also very difficult because there were no open Gamblers Anonymous meetings in town. And so I guess just by hanging out in the community and being a persistent researcher, I was able to make a brief call for help from at one of the meetings, and then word of mouth spread, I guess, that it wasn't painful talking to me and it was all right. So the assessments that I conducted on these 40 older adults were, there were eight instruments: the SF-36, the South Oaks Gambling Screen, the Geriatric Depression Screen, and the Personality Disorder Questionnaire were four instruments that were just paper pencil instruments that they could complete on their own in the first hour of our meeting time. And oftentimes they were finished in a half an hour or 45 minutes. The mini mental status assessment I conducted with them. I also conducted the mini international neuropsychiatric inventory, which is an assessment that identifies Axis I mental disorders, although it doesn't include any questions about gambling, so it's certainly not a comprehensive assessment. Some of you may be familiar with that, or also there's one called the SCID, which also assesses for Axis I diagnoses, and I chose this one because it was a little more brief. And then the last instrument I used was the National Opinion Research Council's Gambling Impact Questionnaire that had embedded in it the NODS, which is their diagnostic criteria assessment for gambling. So it's more close, it's a gambling, like a pathological gambling assessment questionnaire that's more closely related to the DSM-IV criteria than the South Oaks Gambling Screen, although research shows that both of them are fairly consistent and well correlated for identifying gambling problems. The results of this study, and which led me to look more closely at the SF-36 data, was that I found in this population of 80 that 82.5% of the individuals had any mood disorder, and all of those indicated they had depression. Among just the Axis I diagnoses, there was 137 mental illnesses, meaning that every one of my 40 patients had 3.4 on average Axis I psychiatric diagnoses. With regard to personality disorders, 60% had a personality disorder, so obviously some of them more than one, with an average of two, but some with none. The most common were in cluster C, which is obsessive compulsive. 37.5 had obsessive compulsive personality disorder, 27.5 had avoidant, and then the third most frequent was depressive, and of course with the depressive pathology in Axis I, those symptoms might have overlapped. I found it interesting that with this recovering group, they had a higher prevalence of OCD, that personality disorder, than in other studies. But just an anecdotal note, in talking to a colleague who studies self-recovery of older adult alcoholics, she said she found a higher prevalence for obsessive-compulsive disorder, personality disorder as well. And we were wondering if the two illnesses kind of conflicted and increased their level of anxiety about not having control in the environment, and it helped lead them to recovery. So I guess if that were true, having an addiction would make it nice to have obsessive compulsive disorder as well. With this information about the psychiatric diagnoses, I then looked at a review of the literature. With regard to, and maybe I should be on, well, this is a slide early, but with regard to physical issues related to the older adult gambler, we found that there's a higher prevalence, well, in older adults in general, there's a higher prevalence of cardiovascular disease, but among those who are problem and pathological gamblers, there's a higher prevalence than the normal older adult with regard to hypertension, cardiovascular disease, which might explain the defibrillator machines in all the casinos. So to help you remember some of the issues related to older adults, to help you look for older adults with problem and pathological gambling, I developed an acronym, and it spells CASINO. So the C is for cardiovascular disease or hypertension, the A is for affective disorders and alcoholism, the S is for suicide, because this group, older adults, have a high risk for suicide anyway, and then if this population is overly depressed, and older adult study done of the older adult population in Florida, I indicated shame and credit card debt as the higher, is highly prevalent and correlated with this population. So that would support their higher risk for suicide as well. I is for both insomnia and social isolation. And then no is no money for resources such as housing or food or medication. In looking at, I was going to talk just quickly about motivations to gamble. Older adults like to socialize. They can socialize at a casino. The casinos will pick them up. There's other forms of gambling that they can be involved in, too, that might help with mental stimulation and meeting the needs of an entertainment option with individuals that have physical impairments. It really doesn't take too many physical skills to be involved in a gambling activity. And yet we find in a study that came out of Yale that older adult recreational gamblers actually had, they perceived their both physical and psychological health to be better. But that plummets very quickly when they move into the problem and pathological range, which oftentimes they do. With regard to the SF-36 results of my population aged 55 to 64, we found some variations based on the norms, and you can see that all of these were lower scores than the US SF-36 norms. The physical functioning means that they have more limitation in performing ADLs. The bodily pain is that they're more severely limited and have severe levels of pain. Vitality, they feel more tired or worn out all the time. And with mental health, actually, this is a better finding than the general population, because a lower score means that they feel that their health is better now than it was a year ago. I'm assuming if this is a group of recovering, because this is a group of recovering pathological gamblers, that as they recover, they're feeling well, you know, despite the fact that, you know, some things are horrible in their life, they are better than they were a year ago. I'm just going to skip this. I divided it, I divided it into two age categories, but essentially with my older group, I found the same thing. Very important, it's very difficult to detect older adult gamblers. As I mentioned, with trying to provide early detection, it was very impossible. So if you're a healthcare provider, you might find that they come in poor, without any money, vulnerable to both physical and psychological illnesses, or have multiple physical and psychological diagnoses. And if an individual, if a healthcare provider takes the time to ask just two questions to these older adults, we might be able to provide early detection to help treat them for this addiction. And the two questions are, have you had to lie to family members and friends about gambling activities, and have you had to bet with increasing amounts of money to get the same level of satisfaction? So two question lie bet questionnaire that helps. Things that make our older adults more vulnerable are they have more time if they're retired. They might have access to more money because of lump sum retirement accounts. And they are targeted by the industry, the gambling industry. They are targeted with marketing opportunities like free dinners or free overnight stays. These coupons are targeted when they get Social Security checks. They're called the third of the month club. And medication discount coupons are also offered to older adults who gamble. Treatment resources for older adult gamblers include websites, Gamblers Anonymous buildings, or meetings that are available in almost every community, as well as a national hotline. I did not put up resources that I used for my presentation, but I'd be happy to provide them if you have questions.